Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
It's Pickford with the free kick. Breaks for Brathwaite. Oh, Jared Brathwaite. That's something special from the Cumbrian. But in Cissé. Brings it under control. Gilmore ran into Onana, left a bit on the Belgian, and he's been sent off. Billy Gilmore, straight red. It's back out to Pascal Gross. Gross delivers the header, he's in. And Lewis Dunk, it's stoppage time for Brighton.
Second half was a really good away performance, you know, never giving up too much, looking a threat, and then of course we score the goal. And inevitably, they get 9 minutes and all of a sudden, you know, everyone's wondering where that came from. We all do. Their crowd get a lift. They get that freedom to just throw things forward. And if anything, we just should have kept the ball better. That's all. And the final moment, you know what it's like. Stop across. You always got to stop across.
Hello, Blues. Welcome to the latest edition of the Toffee Web Podcast, the audio offering from the web's longest-running site devoted to all things Everton. As you record, it's the evening of Tuesday, the 27th of February, and yesterday the verdict from the appeal board on Everton's challenge to that historic 10-point deduction finally came in. The Toffees have had four of those 10 points reinstated, which is a modest victory for the club, but importantly, it pulls us away from that dotted line separating the bottom three from the rest. A marker that has felt like a magnet in recent weeks as Everton's winless run in the Premier League drags on. The team was, of course, about 4 minutes from ending that barren run at the Amex on Saturday, but couldn't hold on to a precious 1-0 lead against Brighton and had to settle for a point. But they now get the chance to put things right this coming weekend when West Ham come to Goodison Park. But we'll start with that appeal board verdict and what it might mean for the rest of the season. And, of course, the second independent commission that will convene in mid-March. Adam McCulloch is here with myself, Lyndon Lloyd, and Paul Traill. Paul, Everton handed back four of those dock points with the panel only accepting two of the club's 9 points of appeal. happy with that? Or like some Blues in the social media universe, would you only have been satisfied with getting all 10 back?
Well, I never thought getting all 10 back was ever remotely realistic. Yeah. Let's be fair. Yeah, I don't know if I'm happy. I don't know what to think, if I'm quite honest, which isn't great podcast material, but I just don't. I'm still nervous about it. I'm still nervous at what the second appeal brings. Mm. You have to assume that. Assuming's dangerous, but you have to assume that whenever we get punished within the second appeal, surely Forest get more than that. So. My feeling is that if we can stay above Forest now, then we will be safe. And I think it's just kind of all about, it's been such a draining sort of few months, and I feel like we're sort of starting to get towards the end of all that. And I'm just at the point of just like, you know, as long as we're in the league now at the end of the season, it kind of feels like that's all that matters. It's a shame, given that we could have had more points, but. A lot of people, plenty of Evertonians I spoke to, were quite adamant that we weren't going to get any points back at all. So I guess, you know, you look at that, 4 points more, the table looks a lot rosier. Go and beat West Ham on Saturday, and then it's much, much healthier, isn't it? And I just want to get to that point of being, like, safe, clearly safe, really, now. And then making it so that whatever happens is somewhat immaterial, because... I'm just still nervous about it, but yeah, I guess it's nice to have some sort of like half a line draw under it, because we don't know what's going to happen until another couple of months yet, probably. But yeah, so about it, really. It's hard to put into words. It's hard to know what to think for me.
Yeah, I think that's how we kind of all feel, isn't it? Really, it's nice to have some certainty on that part of a decision after weeks of. Just it was clearly affecting the players. It was certainly affecting us as fans. And in a week where we dropped 2 points at home against Palace in a very winnable game, and then against their sort of rivals, aren't they? We'll go with they've got some sort of motorway rivalry. we dropped 2 points against Brighton as well. So to have those 4 points back, yeah, that's nice. But as you mentioned, Paul, it's that second. Decision, whether that precedent's now been set and we're looking at another 6 points, whether that double jeopardy is going to be taken into account, whether Super Silk stays on his season long loan and finds another few points out of somewhere. I don't know. But there are still lots of don't knows, aren't there? And yeah, you're right to mention Forest as well, because again, if his marker has been laid down, then you would expect their penalty to be at least the same, if not more, based on the gravity of the charges against them. So we're still very much in that awkward phase of potentially losing more points along the way. I guess the other worry, and we might touch on this later as the episode goes on, but the uncertainty around the ownership situation and the fact that part of the mitigation for us having the points reduced was that the punishment for administration was obviously 9 points. And that still remains a pretty distinct possibility at this point, with such a disconnect from the owner and the prospective owners clearly not being suitable. I just saw a tweet from Paul BS just before we were about to go on, which again just suggests that their exposure to funds is just it's not going to happen for 777. So that's as big a worry, but. For now, at least, I guess with that first portion of anxiety sort of quelled, we can hopefully focus on the pitch, which is what we all want to be doing. He says, having also had Evertonitis at the weekend as well, so not always the best thing to focus on.
Yeah, I think we said it last week that the 10 points was really never going to happen. I think 4 or 5 points back was about as much as we could have hoped to get back. And I think... when we were making predictions on the podcast a few weeks back, I went for 4 just based on, you know, the original ruling from the independent commission pegging a breach at 6 points. I mean, when you read the decisions from both the commission and the appeal board, it's clear from the pure numbers that we breached. I mean, when you consider that the lower threshold was actually 15 million and we were found to have lost 120. I mean, you can appreciate why both panels regarded it as a serious breach, in quotes, that, you know, kind of warranted a penalty to match. I mean, the issue for us Blues, as we've always said, has been around, you know, the stadium financing, essentially that other clubs have been either handed stadiums on the cheap from their local councils or redeveloped their grounds when costs were allowed to be deducted from PSR calculations. And the fact that, you know, the trend of our spending has been positive for the last three years. And then, of course, that massive imbalance that just exists between clubs like us and the so-called Big Six. So, you know, the original commission and the appeal board, both dismissing our heads of mitigation, which when you take each point in isolation, you know, it stands up to scrutiny. But when you take them all in aggregate, particularly, you know, the situation in Ukraine, the fact that the issue of the loan interest on the stadium construction basically comes down to how the club accounted for it on the books. I mean, I don't think it was unreasonable for some common sense to be applied by the first independent commission when they imposed that 10-point deduction. So, I mean, in that sense, it was really heartening to read the appeal board's verdict and for them to essentially repudiate the first commission for recommending such a harsh penalty in the first place. You know, let's not forget the Premier League itself is pushing for 12 points. So the appeal panel seems to have looked at this more dispassionately and from a more legal perspective, which is how it should have been done in the first place, and that they fell back on the benchmark set by the EFL. That was also key because it really showed up the fact that the Premier League had no sanction framework at all. They nailed us as the guinea pig without giving us any leeway or leniency for being the first club to go through this. So I think, you know, the 4-point reduction is obviously huge in terms of morale. I mean, it's still a nonsense, really, when you sack up our situation with some of the bigger clubs, especially the ones, you know, who tried to join the Super League, or Chelsea, who just, you know, bent the rules to overspend to a mind-boggling degree. But the decision bodes well for the second commission next month. I think with the double jeopardy dimension, if we're hit with a further deduction at all, it'll hopefully only be 2 points at the most. We should be able to absorb that, you know, if we can get our act together on the pitch. But yeah, I just think, you know, particularly the way that we're feeling, or I personally was feeling, I won't speak for anybody else, but the way that I was feeling after the Brighton game, it was just, you know, with this whole uncertainty, it wasn't beyond the bounds of possibility that we could have the 10 points upheld and have another 10 points taken away. And then you really are up against it, aren't you?
Yeah, we don't need to go over and over it, I guess, but I think the big one for me of all them sort of the mitigating factors having it presented is the Ukraine war and the knock-on effect that had on the financier, Osmanov, not being able to do that because he was sanctioned. And that, you know, how the heck can Everton account for that? I mean, it's impossible, you know, and that's the massive one, which I just feel like some sort of leeway or whatever you want to call it has to be applied there. And yeah, I mean, whether 6 points is fair, I don't know. I mean, again, the double jeopardy one, I think without knowing an awful lot or enough about the second breach, I feel it's remarkably harsh for Everton to have to answer to anything at all. And it's because they've tried so hard and done everything they can to sort of, they've gotten rid of so many assets. They haven't signed any players really. If they have, they've been on the cheap and free transfers and stuff like that. You know, they've almost been like working as if they've had a bit of a transfer ban of sorts, or sort of like, you know, some sort of punishment as it is. That's how they've been operating. Unlike Forrest, obviously, who just been, you know, kind of, it feels like kind of disregarding that factor. So I feel really let down with the second breach. And if you're saying to me, oh, well, we can absorb another 2 points, can we? I mean, like, you know, we'd say 10-point penalty was harsh. Overall, you can't, like, you're splitting it up saying, oh, it's 6 points, and then, oh, it's only another two. It's still eight. You know what I mean? It's tough to sort of, you know, take 8 points off us in any of the other last couple of seasons. We'd have been down, comfortably down. Yeah, like, yeah, so, like, you know, so it's, again, you have to give credit to the teams that we've and Dyche that we've been able to absorb 10 points just and not be in the bottom three as it stands right now. So it might end up being remarkably tight, and I think we need one of them little runs again, don't we? Like we had in December, November. You know, imagine back to back wins. Sounds fanciful given the game after this is at Old Trafford, but you know, it's Yeah, a couple of quick wins or a win at West Ham and a draw at Man U or something like that would be, you know, really, really give us a heck of a boost going into the games we've got coming up. I feel that the team will start winning again at some point. It's absolutely unfeasible that they're not going to, you know, win any more games, and they're not losing any games is a really positive sign. A couple of them will go over the line, and it might just take, like, I don't know, four wins maybe between now and the end of the season. That might be enough, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, and they just got to, I think, get into that winning habit again, really, and that's the most important thing now. Just get that distance between us, because, it still could get quite dicey if we're not careful.
And I guess the positive thing about those, if it is those four home wins that we're looking at, we do play the likes of Sheffield United, Forest, Brentford, Burnley, all at home. So, is that right?
Forest could be a horrible game. I mean, there's so much riding on that for both. We could really do with being in a real position of strength by that point. Whereas if it does go a bit wrong, it's not that important, you know. Like, because that could be a real huge game.
Yeah, and I think that's where obviously that Brighton result, which I'm sure we're going to come on to, it does feel like we need one of those shot in the arm results, like a win against the odds, in exactly the same way that result gave us that impetus last season. It's why it feels like a real missed opportunity. West Ham at home, on paper, feels more winnable. Hey, we saw Neil Mopay score at Goodison last year. It doesn't feel as kind of big a hill to climb. He scored against them the other night as well. He just loves West Ham, that lad. But I think there's space definitely for a kind of real morale booster. But that's why Saturday away at Brighton feels like a real missed opportunity. Just to give us that confidence. We've spoken so many times about games where we haven't been the better side and not necessarily scraping out over line. And that really looked like one of those gritty archetypal Deitch away performances, a goal from a set piece and grinding one out. And it would have been really, really nice to get that one over the line.
To wrap up the discussion on the appeal thing and on the points deduction, I mean, Paul, what you said about Ukraine and the spending, basically those two elements, they are going to figure very highly in the second commission, because I think you could with some justification discount the Ukraine impact on our sponsorship, on our general sponsorship revenue for the 21-22 financial year, because obviously the invasion happened in the February and there was only 3 months left or 4 months left of that accounting year. So that I could kind of see why the first commission discounted that. But when I was rereading it last night, it seemed to very much center around the naming rights issue, which if you read the appeal board decision, it's basically they couldn't find any, there was no documented evidence that Mashiri was close to bringing that whole sponsorship arrangement forward into that financial year. But obviously for the following year, once for the entire 22-23 financial year, we've lost an enormous chunk of our sponsorship revenue. And, you know, to make the argument that the club should have foreseen this in the, you know, in the normal practice of business, I think is a stretch. I mean, you know, and particularly when you weigh it up against the likes of, you know, Manchester City, who have their own almost like in-house, you know, in-house sponsorship, you know, almost like a bank vault sitting in the back of the stadium that they just go and take money out of. That's kind of where you have to kind of separate the sort of very legal and very precise looking at the numbers and again, apply some common sense and some leeway into the situation. Likewise on our spending, you know, obviously with us being in the bottom three, I think it is for net spend in the last 5 years or whatever it is, and particularly over the last year, if we have breached, it is almost certainly going to be the stadium costs and then any compensation to Frank Lampard's team, paying off the directors who left last summer, and the bonus for Sean Dyche. I mean, that's probably what will tip us over. So I think, you know, if the argument, which again was contained in the appeal board decision, was the argument was centered around Everton's expenditure on players, then I think this next commission is just really not a factor. It's really not a factor. The club has, in that respect, done everything, almost everything it can do.
Some of the issue there that we've not really spoken about as much is just how culpable Mejiri is in this, because the USM sponsorship, yeah, obviously in terms of naming rights would have been great, but the fact that there was no agreement there, that it wasn't written down on paper, that it was essentially, oh, we were going to bring that forward, shows you how they really were kind of making it up as they went along.
It does sound like a bit of a blag, doesn't it?
yeah. And even if that were the case, if we take Frau Mejiri's word there, then it's almost, well, let's quickly try and paper over cracks before everything, all the water runs through. Mm. And that's been symptomatic of his entire reign. We've seen it in recruitment with players. We've seen it in a lack of recruitment at boardroom level. And then we've obviously seen it now in this sort of slow downfall of his. And hopefully he does make some kind of sensible decision at this very end of his tenure in terms of who is the next custodian of a football club, because that's the really worrying part that we're potentially left with. Who knows?
Apparently we had a nice book about Mejiri that we could plug.
I was going to say, the unofficial Everton timeline, out now on Amazon, buy it now.
But yeah, just quickly, the Ukraine one, it's a big fact. I mean, could we have foreseen that that Russia would get that Putin, Russia were going to go and invade Ukraine? Possibly, yeah. They did it with Crimea. People would have said, oh, that could happen. Could we have foreseen that tragic event would occur and our financier would then get sanctioned on the back of it? Of course not. How the hell would we? I mean, how could anybody have, so you can't put two and two together like that at all. And that has a knock-on effect on the interest cost, because the interest the cost of steel, the cost of all the materials, the cost of all the things, but it's ballooning massively. So I think that Daniel Levy even said recently, there's no way they could build their stadium now. You know what I mean? In the current time. They're fairly fortunate to do it when they did. They couldn't do it now. It's just the costs are way, way too high. What Everton's supposed to do? Stop building it completely, leave a half-built thing. That, you know what I mean? It's crackers, really. And bit of positive thinking there, I suppose, Lyndon, as you were saying. Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it as much as you just panned out. And yeah, maybe there's less and less a case for us to answer for. So perhaps we're not looking at much, if anything. Maybe you got to kind of assume that there's a bit more to come and just get that worked on the pitch and make sure we get them points on the board and make sure that it's not a factor at all and draw a bloody long, bloody big line under this season and start again next year.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's, there seems to be sort of conflicting. There's reports that the club are confident that they're going to be okay. I think Paul the Esk said back in, I think it was just December that, or was it January, and he thought that once all the allowable deductions are in place, that we'd be okay. And yet you've got on the other side, there are a couple of people like there's that Manchester City, who's the fellow who's been on the Manchester City case. I think he's a City fan. He's on Talk Sport a lot. He seems to think that we've breached by quite a bit this time. So who knows? Let's just wait and see. It's going to be, the club's accounts, I think, come out next month, and that will obviously give us a better idea. But let's get back to matters on the pitch, where Everton came so close to registering a second surprise win in Brighton in as many seasons. Jared Branthwaite's cracking goal looked as though it would be a worthy winner, especially when Billy Gilmore was sent off with 9 minutes of the 90 to go. But obviously Lewis Dunk had the last word. Paul, this one felt like a defeat when all was said and done. And how the manager and the players handled those few minutes has divided opinion. How did you see it?
It definitely felt like a defeat for sure. It was that sort of hour or so after the game, we just kind of a little bit like, really just like, muttering to yourself. I was, frustrated, and yeah, it was, just frustrating. But I have quite a bit of sympathy with them actually for this one now. I get what people are saying. You're against 10 men. Just see the game out. I mean, I don't really. I don't really have a problem with the sort of game plan that they had. I mean, they, a few times they tried sort of like just doing a bit of keep ball, and they just got, you know, an honor there and gone, and they tried to play the ball out from defense and just got pounced on and swamped. And, you know, I'm not sure we've really got the players to sort of like just move into this sort of like, you know, keeping possession or whatever people wanted us to do, keep it in the corner, whatever. I'm not so sure we got the players for it. I think we approached the game from there probably the right way, better, with a really good chance to finish it. And if you go two up then and you win the game, and everyone's like, oh wow, what a performance, brilliant. And then at the end, there's a few things, you know, just a few things which he did wrong. And I don't think that's so much on Dyche. I think just the players maybe, you know, lacking application. They're like, you know, Harrison should have got more on the clearance there. The 40 didn't clear that particularly well. I won't really ever go at Beto for not stopping the cross. He's just trying as hard. He got maybe outwitted a bit, maybe perhaps a bit too easy, but fair enough. But it's a great ball there and a great header. And yeah, that was, you know, could easily have not gone in that one. So really, you know, sometimes you got to take your hand. That's a decent goal. We went two under the pump. We didn't give much away. I'm more disappointed that we didn't score with them chances we had at the other end from Beto and then Harrison even afterwards. So yeah, I'm frustrated that we couldn't get over the line. I just want to come back to saying, like, can we just get that break a little bit? I mean, other football I watched that weekend, following that game, I watched Man City play away at Bournemouth, and Bournemouth had loads of chances, like loads, yeah, like, and just couldn't shoot for shit. You know what I mean? So like, what, you know, so is that like, well, the best team in the world? Is that them seeing the game out? You know what I mean? We restricted Brighton into way less chances with that, with 11 or 10 men. You know what I mean? I watched the Wolves v Sheffield United on Sunday. Wolves were terrible. One bit, Sheffield United, the ball just went through everybody and somehow didn't go in, and Wolves come away with a win 1-0. You know what I mean? Does that mean that Wolves saw the game out brilliantly? No, you know what I mean? So I think you need your break sometimes, and obviously when things aren't going for you, they're just not going for you, and that's kind of the way it is. So yes, I'm frustrated with a few things that happened, but I don't think I can really criticise the game plan as it was, because I just don't think we've got the players to sort of keep the ball, or to change the way that they do things in that situation. So a little, not too much criticism for me. Just more still stinkingly frustrated that we just didn't get a line, because Palace was poor, as we all said and all accept. But if you'd got the 4 points from them too, you know, whichever way they came, you'd have been pretty happy with that, really. Yeah, that was a chance to sort of kind of right the wrongs of Palace, so to speak, you know. So that's the frustration with that. I was just more frustrated than anything else, really, but not too much criticism for me, really.
Yeah, it's easier, I think certainly after the game, like both of you, I was, you know, I was probably more than muttering to myself, but really, really disappointed. Because when you've obviously taken a side like Brighton that close, with such a good goal as well from Branthwaite, such a wonderful finish, pure Dyche ball from Pickford into the penalty area, knocked down, centre back, pinging one into the top corner. To take them that close and then to then concede ourselves from a sort of second ball from a set piece so late on, particularly against 10 men, really does feel like a defeat. Maybe now that we're here on Tuesday night and, what, 4 points better off as well, maybe it feels a little less frustrating, because I'm sure we all would have taken that point before the game. But I guess the really worrying thing is, I know Branthwaite's comments after the game, which was certainly the way I saw it as well, that we stopped pressing when Brighton went down to 10 men. And that in itself is worrying. Now, how much of that is Dyche's instructions and us sitting deeper, how much it's the players having that mentality of not being able to necessarily see a game out, which would make sense when we've not won in so long. That's the tricky bit, and I think that exposes some of the limitations with the side. But I think a point on paper is not a bad one. So if we can take some of the positives from that game, whether it's the fact that, yeah, we you're right, Paul, we did restrict them, and they are a very good attacking side, so to restrict them to efforts from distance, apart from that weird Pickford moment where he came herring out of goal, they really didn't sort of do too much. And we had our moments as well. Any other day, that Decore volley flies into the back of a net. It was an absolutely world-class clearance from Lamperty on the line. and would have been a really nice goal. So disappointing, but there were at least signs of life there. And hopefully we can take the better parts into that West Ham performance in front of the crowd at Goodison. And hopefully as well, we'll see Onana from the start. I know we don't want to see Idrissa kind of get injured, but Onana does make a big difference and I would like to see more of him in the running. So that might be another enforced Dyche change that maybe works out for the better.
Yeah, he did make a big difference. I'd like to know if that was a tactical decision or if it was just based purely around Onana's fitness. You know, whether Dyche felt that he just needed someone of Gay's profile more than Onana's, but you could just see the difference that he made because you know, I think it was a bit of a non-event first half from our perspective, but I thought the second half was obviously until the sending off was a really good away performance. I mean, as you said with that Doucouré effort, we were so unlucky not to go ahead. And I mean, apart from, I think there's just one speculative effort from Evan Ferguson, I can't remember Brighton having a shot until Gilmore's red card. And I think the sending off, I don't think it did us any favours whatsoever because we really did have, we seemed to have a handle on the game at 1-0. And I think under normal circumstances, which we've seen, you know, we've seen Dyche do it many times, you know, get ahead and then dig in and just see it out. I think you can, we've done it before, and I think you can have a different approach when it's 11v11 and another approach versus when it's 11v10. And I think that was my frustration with the way that the game panned out. I think, as I put in my report, and it wasn't popular with some people, is that there was blame to go around, you know, in all aspects, I think, for just in terms of managing that game. I think if you've got the man advantage, Doucouré is probably very tired by that point, and I can understand why you would take him off. But I would have preferred to see someone to go more like for like, maybe throw Chimiti on there, who I think when he's had his little cameos has shown that he can actually be a presence up front and cause some problems. And then you know you can keep Brighton penned back a bit more than I think. Well, not that I think. It was obvious that we didn't. And I think we just, as Bradthwaite said, we just surrendered the initiative to Brighton. And you've allowed that situation where sometimes, you know, 10 men can play better against the 11 because of they're kind of galvanized into a response. So I just think that, I just think we sat back too much and ended up paying the price because I think we panicked a bit. You know, does McNeil have to concede the corner? Maybe he gets a shout from Pickford that Pickford didn't give him to not concede the corner. You know, maybe Harrison doesn't try and head it away. He tries to get a boot on it. There's lots of things you can second guess after the fact. But I think once you get over the disappointment of throwing away the lead and take that big picture view, it was a point away from home. As you said, Adam, it's one we'd have taken with both hands before kickoff. And obviously this appeal board decision just makes everything feel a lot less urgent for the time being, because the big frustration for me and why I was, you know, tearing out what hair I have left was that we just had this sort of burning need to pick up as many points as possible to separate ourselves from the bottom three, particularly with the second PSR charge hanging over our heads. And it's felt as though this elusive win isn't going to come. And so when it was just so, it was in the palm of our hands, and I feel like we just threw it away. So that was my frustration on the day.
I was more frustrated with when we drew away at Fulham, like, because Fulham was one when like we were in a weird way, because like Fulham was one we were like under the cosh for a lot of the game. We had to defend quite well. I should have had a penalty first off, really, but by the by, a little bit. And all that happened, we hung in the game and we did pretty well and then missed an open goal in the last minute of the game. You know what I mean? And that's just sort of like guaranteed 3 points. Now, trying to hold out a win away at Brighton. They've lost once at home all season. You know what I mean? And getting undone by a really good header, let's be fair. You know, that was a really good goal. I could have been defended better. You know what I mean? Could Onana have given him a little bit of a nudge or something like that? You know what I mean? Maybe that felt a lot. They let him get to it. You know, there's a lot of factors there, really. There's other games which are frustrating me a little bit more. You know what I mean? Which I thought like we could have come away with a win. just as Fulham's one springs to mind immediately. So, yeah, it's a good point, especially Brian, on the bigger picture. Just anytime you get done with an injury time goal, it's obviously a bit of a kick in the proverbials, isn't it? And that's the thing. But we just got a lot of positives to take. I thought we actually kept the ball first 20 minutes. But bloody hell, you'd take a draw after 20 minutes, wouldn't you? The way the first 20 minutes went, and then mm-hmm. we grew into the game. I was quite impressed with how we kept possession and kept the ball and took the ball out of defence quite well. Particularly as we grew into the first half, and I'd say we probably won the second half earlier. I thought we were better than them in the second half. We certainly won on chances. The better one still haunts me. I think, again, they're more frustrated with that than the goal we conceded, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, he's not clinical, is he? You know, but it's just, you threw one goal there, you expect it. I think it's a better opportunity than what they had to win it, to equalise, put it that way, you know? So, things like that, it's not scoring the goals at the key moments, which is hurting us more than defence, because we're not conceding that many goals, and that sort of thing will happen, as will the screamer from IU, the hit and hope which flew in. You know what I mean? That'll happen if you're keeping clean sheets and just. But if you just need, if you're not scoring at the other end enough, and our strikers obviously aren't, then it's that sort of thing will happen, and it's start putting the ball in there at the other end, then we win that game. It's kind of as simple as that for me, really.
And that's what Deitch would say. He would point to that, you know. He would point to that, the obviously the goal, that the goal in quotes that gets cleared off the line. Beto's miss, I think, was it in our group chat that I put them, Beto's like a 1 in 10 striker, I think, at this point. He needs,
I think that's very generous.
So many opportunities to score. And it's funny that the first game that we saw him was the Doncaster away, and he puts that magnificent header against the post. I don't think he's managed to put a header anywhere near on target since. You know, he's just, if he played for anybody else, I think he'd be fascinating to watch. But for us, he's just really frustrating. But you got to hand it to him, though, that as soon as he comes on, he does offer something, because it's very different to the way that Calvert-Lewin plays. And so it's funny, almost within a couple of minutes of him coming on, we have a goal-scoring chance. I think it's just that sort of immediate impact that he has. If he could just find some clinical finishing from somewhere, you know, I think he could be really, really useful. But I think, I don't know, maybe he's – I keep saying hopefully he's going to be one of these players that needs a full season to adapt. But he's just a very, very awkward footballer. The one other thing I was going to say, just listening to you, Paul, was that having seen the way that the goal was scored, I always wonder if you would have put Michael Keane on instead of Ashley Young, put a bit of height in there. But I suppose Deitch would say that, you know, we could quite easily, because obviously they had the Ansu Fati chance, we could quite easily have been done on the floor as well, in which case maybe you want someone like Ashley Young in there. But it's done. We got a point. And so I think we just move on to West Ham now.
Yeah, sticking Michael Keane on it, that just feels very much like the old classic Moyes sub, you know, which seems to bite us in the ass every flipping time, isn't it? Like, yeah, so I'm not an advocate of that one.
I think listening to you both sort of going over Beto's lack of a clinical nature, and then debating should we bring on Michael Keane or Ashley Young, I think that exposes, to be honest, where we are at in a lot of ways in terms of personnel. I saw the stat earlier that Pickford has completed 58 passes into the opposition box, which is more than four times the amount of the nearest competition, which is Brentford's goalie. That suggests that a lot of our goal scoring action is coming from essentially Pickford taking free kicks from deep. When it's not that, it's from a set piece. Obviously, that's what leads to the goal. And then at the back, we are sometimes hanging on. But yes, we restricted Brighton a lot, but there's lots of, you know, Tarkowski throwing his chest in the way of the ball, and lots of blood and guts. And it's not always pretty. I think it would probably be enough for now if, as you both just said there, if Beto could, you know, repeat the Doncaster trick and then, you know, add another 5% onto it and actually find the back of a net, that would make all the difference, wouldn't it? You are right, Lennon. He had something. He, like you say, he won the free kick that I think James Garner put in. And,
which he missed his header with.
Yeah.
Which he missed his header with. Yeah. It's a thing, yeah. There's a big caveat there, yeah. He made it happen and then it didn't happen. But it would maybe be interesting. He seems to get chances late on in games. Mm. And I wonder if it could be as simple as starting better. He does his sort of run and ragged thing, maybe, yeah, he's going to lose the ball a bit, but also might draw the odd foul. And then we bring on Calvert-Lewin, and rather than seeing an absolutely shattered Calvert-Lewin fail to really kind of get a chance, which, again, in this game, is probably one half chance was that one that sort of dunk cleared and got away from goal, which I feel like Calvert-Lewin would have put that in. Again, it's a totally different game, isn't it? Maybe that's a way. I don't know. The other thing I was going to ask you both about was Jack Harrison, because as well as being slightly culpable in the goal to a small degree, perhaps, but obviously he misses a chance at the end. Yeah, because he's small. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, small and young. It's not always literal. but I think I saw rumblings last week that he wants to make the move permanent, and is that something? Let's discount all the ownership and whether we'll actually have £20 million, let alone £20 to spend together. I'll go to you, Lennon, first. Would you make Jack Harrison's move permanent?
Oh, it's a really difficult one, because under normal circumstances you'd say no, because I just don't think that he's offered enough. I mean, he's not quite the player. I think I've said this on the pod before. He's not quite the player that I thought we'd be getting from Leeds, or the one that I thought that we saw at Leeds. He seemed to be much more involved from a goal scoring and attacking perspective. And maybe that's just the way. Maybe it probably is the way that we play. But I just think that, as I say, under normal circumstances, if we had a transfer budget to speak of at all, then I think you would look somewhere else. I think that given if Sean Dyche is to stay, which there's no reason why he wouldn't at this point, he seems to be a Dyche kind of player, given that he's got the industry, he's got the right attitude. I think the three that we're talking about is something like 12 to 13 million. I think some of the initial reports pegged it at 20, but I can't imagine it's that high. I think we're looking at 12 to 13. If Leeds don't get promoted, which I think is, it's unlikely at this point, isn't it? But if they don't get promoted, then I think it's as low as 4. But if we're looking at 12 to 13, it's right in that gray area where it's quite a lot of money for us right now. But you do keep a player around who's familiar with the system, familiar with the manager, has some goal and assist production for the team this season. So I think at a push, if our financial situation is the way that it is and we could pay, Leeds in installments, then yes, just.
Yeah, I'd be kind of. we had a similar conversation at the match with my mate the other week, actually, and we kind of said just that. It depends where we're at. I mean, 20 million quid, no way. You know what I mean? That'd be way too much. But if it's like around about half that or a lot more than that, and as you say, and we can weight it so that it's that there's some sort of affordability with it, then yeah, I guess, like, again, he's a Dyche player. He's quite versatile, can play a few different roles. He's he's reliable. You know, he's fit. His fitness record's good. Yeah, I wouldn't be averse to it, but ideally, you'd like to be thinking, we can upgrade on that. We can do better. But given the reality of where we're at, it might be a bit of a necessity. I wouldn't be against that if that's the situation. I think he could be valuable to us, but it just kind of. Just kind of highlights the position, the situation we're in, really, and we don't know where we're gonna, what the ownership's gonna look like. That's one for another pod, and how that's gonna end up, and we'll just have to come and see where we are with that. So, don't know is the honest answer, Adam.
How are you, Adam?
That would have been my response as well. Yeah, I think at £20 million, it's obviously far too much. He's got, I think, about 4 years left on his contract, so that's probably why the price is a little higher. But I think he's shown flashes, and do I prefer him on the right wing to Ashley Young? Yeah, obviously. So that's part of the decision being made there, I guess. But yeah, you'd like to think maybe in the summer we could aim a bit higher, but then it's going to be a strange summer, isn't it? Because we've got so many players out of contract. We've got other players with just a year left, like Decore, Calvert-Lewin, Michael Keane as well, I think, Godfrey. So there's potentially a lot of turnover. And if there isn't a lot of money to spend, and who knows what the ownership situation will be, spending any kind of chunk on someone who's been middling at best, but like you say, knows the lay of the land, maybe that makes a decision a bit trickier, but we'll see. I am probably getting ahead of myself, wishful thinking of summer shopping sprees rather than oh god, please beat West Ham on Saturday.
Just quick as well, though. I actually got a mate at work who's a Leeds fan, and Leeds United are funny to like these the supporters are awesome, because they seem to hate everybody. they seem to hate every single club. And because speaking to mate the other day in work, and he was like, oh, well, all the Judases who left, one of them being Jack Havison, they don't want him back. So he might be in a situation where Leeds might not get promoted. They're looking quite good, actually. I think they've won like 8 or 9 in a row. They're on a heck of a charge, actually. So there's a pretty good chance they'll come up. Which case, and then Jack Harrison's going to want to stay there. In a situation, the fans don't want him there. it might be an interesting situation that. So don't know what I mean. That video of his when he saw his mom. I don't know if you saw that at the I think it was in the Gladys Street. He went over or something like that, and she was like, "Oh, you should stay here, Jack." That's caused a big noise at Leeds United. So I think he might end up being in a bit of a tricky spot. Maybe we get him on loan again. That might be the best the best scenario. Yeah, another season long loan, and that would probably do it for me.
Then one back right at you, Adam. Would you keep Ashley Young for another year?
I've just frozen, I think, as well.
He's frozen. He can't handle it.
that face just answered the question there.
Yeah. Did it freeze in perfect disdain?
Yes. Yes.
Just offended you've even asked. Yeah, it was like my Wi-Fi buckled as like my vein throbbed just at the very thought of no, I mean, although I am against keeping Ashley Young, I'm not that against him as a footballer person. I think it would if we are keeping Ashley Young, and if let's say we're keeping Ashley Young as he is now, i.e. almost a nailed on starter or very much a part of the first team furniture, that would be worrying. That would suggest that our recruitment or lack thereof is going very badly, and that we are just in desperate need of bodies. Because that's the other thing. We're not seeing, you mentioned Shamit before, Lynn, and we're not really seeing younger players kind of come through. There's no one really knocking on the door. So if the likes of, say, the players who seem kind of nailed on to leave in the summer, like Gomez and Dele and then other fringe players as well, If we are having to keep Ashley Young in there, he becomes a bit of an Andy Lonergan figure. But Andy Lonergan, if he was having to start every game, and that doesn't sit right with me. So if it was as a squad player and someone to have in the dressing room and someone to occasionally come on and cause a bit of fume, then yeah, fine. But anything beyond that would, yeah, be a sign of the times.
What you've just described is how I thought he was going to be used this season.
Yes.
And I would be fine with that. My reason for getting rid of him now is just because you just removed the crutch for Deitch. You know, this almost going back to the Moyes tactic of just throwing on or relying on someone just because they're experienced, you know?
Yeah. 3-year deal for you, Paul, or
I mean, if if he was to be used as a utility player, as backup, as, you know, player to help. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't really against the youngster, but I mean, he thought he made a really, really good tackle, actually, in the box just after coming on, which was, you know, a long way towards preventing the goal. I don't see what he did, what else he could have done in the time he had on the pitch the other day. But that's, I think that's how he should be being used, you know, coming on to help see games out, when we've got injury problems and that, he shouldn't be starting games on the right wing at home to Palace. And I think we're all kind of in agreement on that. I think he's, I like him. He seems a good pro. He seems a good lad. I think he probably does quite a lot in terms of, you know, keeping standards high and sort of, you know, on the training ground and stuff. But yeah, he should be there to see out games and to sort of, you know, play when we're short on numbers and that sort of thing. Not starting 25, 30 games in a season. That shouldn't be the way.
Yeah, agreed. So don't start him against West Ham then, is what you're saying. I don't foresee many changes to the team for West Ham. Unfortunately, looks like Moyes' fellas got their act together just in time against Brentford the other night, which was annoying. But because they look dreadful at Forest, I'm hoping that West Ham shows up. But I don't know. I'm banking on a general lift from this appeal decision to just kind of infect everybody, and hopefully just people can relax a bit more and we can play some football. How do you think it's going to go, Paul?
Well, I was in a weird way, I was kind of made up that West Ham did win last night. You think, like, if a team just that would have been, like, I think their third defeat in a row, and you kind of think, like, yeah, if a team, yeah, keeps on losing, eventually, obviously, they booked that trend. So yeah, I'm always kind of a little bit sort of superstitious, sort of for with them sort of things. So you know, I didn't want to go and score four, but I watched that game last night, most of it anyway, and I thought West Ham don't defend very well. They're very un-Moyes, actually, the way they're defending at the moment. So I feel there'll be chances for us in the game if we can keep it solid. I mean, Brentford had a terrible first 10 minutes last night, and they paid the price in a 2-2. West Ham started strongly. If we can keep it solid there, try and get on the front foot, we'll get chances. I'm pretty sure of that. So I'd fancy us there. And West Ham did rely on at 2-1 did rely on a wonder goal. He's not going to be able to hit one like that ever again. God, said it now.
Cheers, Paul.
I just saw enough there. I saw enough chinks in the armour for West Ham there to see why they've lost a few games, to see why it's all not so rosy for them and at the moment. And yeah, but, they might have one eye on Europe as well. I think they're playing on Thursday. Their European Conference, let's face it, worked well for them last season, having that to focus on rather than the league, and they might have an eye on that instead. So, I think we'll do it. I think now is the time to finally sort of, you know, whether that's West Ham are often a bit like us in that sort of regard. If there's ever a team that's quite obliging for sort of teams that haven't won in a while, I think us and West Ham and Newcastle tend to be the teams which roll over and get the bellies tickled. So that's hopefully we can. Tickle their bellies, get the job done there. So I'm hopeful that we can do that. I saw Chimiti scored a couple of goals to the under-21s in the cup yesterday. That one was a penalty, but that's good to see. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's played his way into a little bit of game time, perhaps because you know the others clearly aren't scoring. I don't expect changes up top in terms of starting the game. Perhaps Chimiti might get a bit more of an opportunity off the bench. Who knows? But I fancy us to finally get that victory over the line.
Yeah, let's tickle their bellies, lads.
A rousing half-time team talk.
I mean, on the one hand, the result on Monday was exactly what we wanted, in that it kept Brentford down there, and they seem to really gone under the radar as a struggling side. Well, obviously, we're above them now, thanks to that. 4 points back on the board. But yeah, as you say, Paul, you'd rather West Ham winning is one thing, but scoring four goals and having Jared Bowen get a hat trick and suddenly have a bit of confidence flowing through the team isn't ideal. But yeah, I think you're right. Besides those sort of worrying signs of, you know, players like Kudus, who's got, you know, the sort of the nearly Everton moment, which feels like a bit of a narrative, and obviously Moyes and Zouma as well in there. If we're going away from superstition and looking at it from the point of view that as a fan base, we'll hopefully be a bit more relaxed going into the game after the decision yesterday. And then that feeds hopefully into the players on the pitch, and certainly mentioned earlier, but I think starting Onana and having a bit more control in the middle would be a big part of that. Then I think it does feel a winnable game. It might take more than a tickle, I think they are the sort of side I would like to face if we were trying to kind of break that duck. So I think there's something in that, and I've got this sneaking suspicion Beto's going to score, and it's based on no logic, no reason, nothing that I've seen from him on a footballing sense. But there's a gut feeling that suggests to me that Beto, this might be the week that one goes in off his arse and we get it over the line. So that's my prediction.
I would certainly take that. Yeah, I was I didn't see the whole game, the West Ham Brentford game. I was encouraged by the sort of closing stages as Brentford were starting to cause them some problems. As a Brentford fan, I would have been quite frustrated at the kind of pedestrian way they were going about it at times. So I think that, yeah, the West Ham can be ruffled. They can be got at. And I think that's, you know, they're funny. Paul, you're right. They're not really playing defensively like a West Ham team. So they're not the sort of team that's going to come to Goodison to park the bus and be hard to get through. But they can obviously cause us problems at the other end if we're not, you know, if we're not at it defensively. But yeah, I've got a decent feeling about this one. And as I said, I just hope that the atmosphere around the club will just feel just that little bit lighter, and there won't be, because I think the big problem against Crystal Palace was just the frustration in the crowd and this sort of anxiety that was just permeating everything. I think some of that will have been relieved a bit by, you know, getting these 4 points back and just sitting a couple more places up the table, you know, because there's, let's assume that for now that, you know, the point situation doesn't change between now and the end of the season. There's a lot more teams down there with us in the mix. And certainly when you look at Forest situation, you can be fairly confident that they're going to end up below us in terms of points once their commission has weighed in and taken points off them. So yeah, and it'd be nice to end this run, get a win. I think we've got a really, really good record against West Ham over the history of the Premier League. So let's capitalize that on that and put one over them once again.
Tickle some bellies.
Tickle some bellies. Exactly.
The only little thing I was going to mention was a quick shout out. Bear in mind that obviously Everton strikers aren't scoring at the minute. Shout out to Ellis Sims, who scored his first career hat trick.
Yeah.
For Coventry against Mighty Maidstone. So nice to see him amongst the goals. And maybe finally find a bit of form after that big summer move for him. So
yeah, one of those Mighty Mids alongside
Tom Cannon.
Thank you. Yes, alongside Tom Cannon. How much game time might they have got? Possibly more Cannon than Sims, I think. I don't know, he just felt maybe a little bit closer. But then, you know, look at Chimiti, and they're all sort of a fairly similar profile player. Mm. And you got Beto in there. Anytime you have someone of, you know, who you've paid 25, or will eventually maybe pay 25 million for, seeing as we haven't actually paid a bean for him yet.
Yeah.
You know, you'd always think that he would get the nod first. But yeah, it's interesting. I was sad to lose Tom Cannon, actually, that the club felt it was necessary that it had to sell him. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's the way things go, isn't it?
Goals, goals, goals.
Okay, well, we'll call it an evening there, fellas. Thanks, as always, for your company and for your insights. As I wrote for Toffee Web earlier today, hopefully the appeal board decision is that glimmer of light at the end of a very long tunnel. And as we've discussed here, it can lift a bit of the weight that the whole club has been feeling of late. Thanks to you for listening. Take care of the Toffees. We'll be back with a new podcast next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.